All right, everyone, thank you very much for coming. I have already spoken for quite some time today. My voice is a little raspy. I suspect, given the number of people that I said, hey, go ask that in the afternoon talk, that there's questions. Since I would really like all of the questions to be answered during the time that people are here, I'm gonna do things super backwards and take questions first. And when we run out of questions, I will go through some prepared content. And when you have more questions, please let me know. Because as it turns out, I spent a significant amount of time getting this release out and prepping this morning's talk, and this one is crap. So, everyone that was lined up for questions like 4 hours ago, please come find the microphones. And if you don't, I guess I will do this talk, but I was really hoping not to. Question, great, please. Great, wonderful, please. I'm not joking.
So this isn't directly related to the libraries, but I had an elephant in the room question. Do you think the standard itself could live at head?
Okay, so there's a paper that I published in conjunction with most of the direction group this summer and had a first presentation to Toronto. And I'm supposed to have something that the whole committee can vote on at Albuquerque. And it's not a, we're standardizing this, but it is a change in how we define what compatibility means for the standard. And by and large, this is currently, the standard operates under you shall never change the meaning of existing code. And that's fine, except if you look at things like the coroutines TS, we're inventing new keywords like co-await. That's not the keyword that anyone wants. We're just afraid to take await, right? So the proposal runs roughly this. The committee shall decide this is the direction we actually want to go. We're clearly going there for C++ N plus one. We need all of the compiler vendors in C++ N 17 to issue a warning for everything that's going to break or change behavior in the next version, right? And so if we want await instead of co-await, then when you build in C++ 17 mode and you have use of the name, like A-W-A-I-T, that would be picked up as a keyword instead of as a your local function call, it generates a warning. Okay, so then you just search and replace and you would be like, oh, okay, I need to change await to my await, or I don't know, you pick a better name. And then you can update to 20 and the rest of the language can have a better name, right? And like, so basically the proposal is not that the language can necessarily live at head, but I am definitely trying to get the language to operate in a mode where new versions are a rollout and deployment plan as opposed to a, bam, this just happened to you. And I think that's probably about as good as we're gonna get. It's not done by any means, but I think it's likely. I had much less fight on that than I expected in Toronto, which is always a nice sign. So most of the things that I work on are about we need the ability to change. And that is true both for Abseil and for the standard. And now Marshall wants to chime in.
Just a quick follow-up on that. I can't speak about the language. Okay. I can speak about libraries.
I should talk into the mic.
Okay. I can talk into the mic. Anyway, I can speak about libraries. And most of the standard library vendors do not wait for the publication of a standard to start implementing new features. They're usually buried behind, you know, for, well, dash std equals C++ 2a, say. In the next release of libc++, if you do that, you'll get std endian. just as a very small example. And those kind of things, you can start using them, you know, in a few months. But yeah, the adoption is all hit or miss because, you know, different people have different implementation priorities. You know, is it Endian? I did Endian because it took me less than an afternoon. as opposed to, say, I was talking to somebody this is over the break who is proposing SlotMap. If that gets adopted, that will be more than an afternoon's work to implement. And so it will go onto a schedule and will happen eventually. So you can do an approximation to live at head with your standard library vendor, except that you have to take on the responsibility to know that what they've implemented and what they haven't implemented.
And then, going back to that, Marshall is external commit number one for Absale, where he pointed out that our logic for when std string view exists was assuming the standard. Whereas in libc++, it exists in much earlier versions. So the very first external commit to Absale's GitHub repo is changing the detection logic for, oh, if you're libc++, then yeah, you have std string view earlier than 17. So it's all one big thing.
All right, so this is a two-parter. The first part is I'm mildly curious about the near-term timetable. You mentioned a bunch of things that you want to ship soon, or I don't know if soon, I don't know if you said soon, but I'm curious about what you plan on shipping in like the relatively near future. Okay. And the one thing I noticed you mentioned was command line flags.
Yep.
So I'm curious how like gflag, glog, gtest tie into all of this.
Yes. So the biggest thing that my team is going to do for the next couple months is clean up what mess we've made internally. Because this has been, I'm going to tell this story. When I talk to civilians about what I do, the description that I use has been, we have decided that it's important to have a standard foundation for buildings. We have decided, therefore, that it is important to change the foundation out from under the Empire State Building. We are not allowed to close the building or block traffic while we're doing that, and we have discovered nuclear waste in the basement. So all of the stuff that we actually shipped is the result of that, but we have also been doing it like just staggering. Like, I claimed at a director level last week, this might be the largest refactoring that humanity has ever done. I'm not sure anyone's gonna call me on that. Anyway, so the first thing that we're gonna do is finish cleaning that up. The next priorities are, like you said, flags and logging. That was in the initial release until some of my people came up with a design that let us explode the oldest, cruftiest knot in the dependency graph. And then we realized, oh, we could delay. So flags and logging is coming soon. I really don't like giving time estimates because it's really hard to estimate how long refactoring is going to take when there's a quarter of a billion lines of code that depends on you. But I'm sort of guessing it's spring or it's probably winter or spring. Winter or spring, yeah. They are derivatives of the old glog and gflags packages. The flags API has changed rather more dramatically. One of the things that we really didn't like, I think it was probably 3 years ago, was that the flags API is based entirely on having totally unsynchronized globals.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, it's not good.
You created a mess in our code base too.
I'm so sorry. It wasn't me.
I know, it was me, and that's a different problem.
Yeah, so the flags API that we will ship, whenever we ship it, magically, we designed it specifically so that there is an incremental path from the old to the new. I don't know whether we will be able to pull that off if you're using the current version of external GFlags, but we should have that discussion. But by and large, it's everything is accessed through accessors and setters so that they can be synchronized. One of the side effects of that is for strings in particular, you wind up with different lifetimes than you did in the old version. John has more or less demonstrated that this works out in practice, although it is in theory quite worrisome. We'll have more experience with confirming that that actually works in practice when we actually ship it. But yeah, it's the new Flags API will be both actually thread safe. It's atomics for atomic reasonable types. It's locks for things that are more complicated like strings. The logging API is largely API compatible with everything that's gone before it, at least the simple parts. And the Flags API has user-providable type extensions. It will also, I'm almost completely positive, have support for containers of primitive types.
About time.
But I'm also going to be kind of opinionated about you shouldn't really have containers of containers of containers of flags of types. So you could build that yourself, but I'm going to laugh at you when you come to me with bugs. So take your pick.
So just one clarification request. Mm-hmm. Your promise of tool conversion may not apply to the current GFlag GTest.
True.
Okay. All
right. We will do what we can. We will do what we can. It does not... I can't promise that. We haven't controlled that API for many years. I have discussed with the current maintainers of the external GFlags package, and that was very early and before we had publicly announced. So I think the two communities need to have a discussion about, like, what do we want to do? Do we want to just ignore the thing? Do we want to try to build a transition path? What do we want to do? Because it's not a bad existing package. There's just, like, we used it successfully for many years, for many billions of dollars. There's just some things that we think could be improved. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to. So, sort of take your pick. Yeah.
So I haven't had yet an opportunity yet to look at the repository. I mean, since you announced it this morning, we have at my team, we've got a library that's pretty similar, I think, because we've got forward declarations and using a lot of C++ 17-like objects in 14 and 11. And I was wondering, if we were to deprecate our library and start using yours instead, what kind of headaches would there be? So we use CMake, for example. Do you use CMake? What build systems do you use? And if your build system settings are incompatible with ours, how difficult has your experience been with migrating it over to be compatible?
So, as it turns out, I have slides on that. Currently, it's Bazel. Soon, it will be CMake, in addition. Bazel is what we use internally. That is always going to be our, like, source of truth as far as the build graph goes. That said, Protobuf and gRPC have many happy users that are CMake based. I have nothing against CMake. It's just not what we're expert in. I really desperately wanted us to have CMake when we shipped. But like I said, Empire State Building, like, this was hard. That, you know, so we'll get there soon. Someone came up to me after the talk and was asking the same question. I desperately want this to exist. We don't have a lot of experience with that because we live off in our weird ivory tower. So my strongest suggestion is go join the absale.io email list and start a thread if one hasn't already happened for who wants to help us build CMake stuff. My only requirement in that space that I'm aware of is that Protobuf has a requirement on CMake from like 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that. And so we'll have to be at least that old. You can't use super current CMake. Otherwise, yeah, like we should do that. As far as the rest of that question and things like warnings flags and build flags, low-level libraries should support everything. Like, it is irresponsible for the thing at basically the bottom of the stack to not work with whatever configuration you want, right? It's very much like, you know, be liberal in what you accept. If you are a dependency of everybody, try not to be the limiting factor. That said, not all warning flags are the same. This is code that actually exists in our repository right now. Does anyone know what flag I'm about to yell at? Unreachable code can just go die in a fire. Those are constants to the compiler. So the compiler's like, oh, I know exactly what this means. And either the internals of that conditional or the break are unreachable depending on what configuration your build has, right? Your compiler is evaluating unreachable code with respect to the current build settings, not with respect to all possible build settings. And when you're trying to build on every platform that is like common and sensible, you're gonna wind up with a few macros in there. We've tried to keep that under control, but like, I spent a little time actually in the last week trying to make unreachable code pacified, and then was like, you know what? That guy's stupid. Like, no, unreachable code is just not ever gonna be a thing that happens. So, sorry. We can have a deeper discussion if that turns out to be a non-starter, but fundamentally, please just don't try to enforce that on a very general library. So, did I hit all of your points?
Yes, I do have a follow-up question, though.
Go for it.
So with, you'd said that you wanted an upgrade path and tools that would help developers follow that upgrade path. So it strikes me that some of the build systems might also have similar kind of issues with upgrading. Would you be able to create tools that help developers, you know, upgrading their own build systems as well?
I don't know. In theory, yes. In practice, I genuinely don't know. I will say, from internal discussions, one of the people that has been like really rah-rah as soon as they saw this morning's slides is one of the lead developers on Bazel. Like, please make this work. Like, this is exactly what we want. And it's not just a language thing. It's not just a C++ thing. It's an industry thing. So yes, in theory, but I have not thought about it. Like, I have this, a lot of my thoughts are probably applicable in software engineering, but like my job is just C++, so.
For what it's worth, within Google, Bazel manages to live ahead and upgrade Bazel 5.
The comment from the audience was, for what it's worth, within Google, Bazel manages to live ahead and upgrade Bazel files when they make incompatible changes. So, yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Anyone else have questions? Great, I will go to slides. So, the stuff that has been slightly prepared. I'm gonna talk a little bit about naming, namespaces, exceptions. I'm gonna skip the build question because I think we just covered that. I will probably skip over and talk about compatibility guidelines. We may do a quick tour of the pieces that are in the repository right now, a little bit more in depth. If there is time, I will demo things like the debugging features, trigger the deadlock detector, trigger ASAN, trigger TSAN, demonstrate that the pre-adopt types melt away in C++ 17 mode. And then we'll go back to questions. Generally speaking, if you have questions at any time, don't save them to the end. I would really like this to be more interactive. I'm really not up to lecturing right now. So We'll dive in. One of the things that you will notice when you look through Abseil is we have sort of an unusual idiosyncratic naming style. If you look at naming for other libraries that you might be touching, the standard or boost, things like that, you will certainly find a lot more things like on the left than what we have on the right. Abseil tends towards flatter namespaces and prefixes on names as opposed to nested namespaces. But even the prefixes aren't necessarily ubiquitous. So what's up with that? Did we just totally screw up? I would argue not. We could, of course, have prefixed everything with additional nested namespaces in there. This is what the standard seems to be leaning towards. And I would like to argue that this is a terrible idea and that the standard has had a misstep there. I posted to standards mailing list during the Toronto meeting, enumerating all of the ways in which I think nested namespaces are wrong, and I will sort of re-summarize some of that here. But one of the key points is I actually don't care if that alphabetic list of symbols in the library is useful. Like, I want it to be useful, don't get me wrong, but that's not the thing that I'm optimizing for, right? I've used CPP references list of things in namespace std 5 times in the last 6 months. I use CPP reference about that many times a day in a normal day. I usually know the name of the thing I'm looking up. And the more interesting question is not so much does this name make sense in a list? Can I tell perfectly what consume suffix does? The more interesting question is, can I tell what this does when I encounter it in code and I'm not familiar with that function? Right? Abseil, like, I have had a significant impact on the Google training programs, the Google style guide, all of those things for years now. This is what we optimize for, right? I don't care how it looks in the header. I care how it looks when you're reading it and you're unfamiliar with it. And this, I claim, is sufficient, right? Nobody's going to look at this code and be like, I have no idea what consume prefix does, right? There's enough clue there that you can figure it out pretty easily, I think, I hope. Readability matters. Maintainability also matters. So consider, how likely are you to write using foo widget when you want to use something out of the foo library? Or, God forbid, you using declare namespace foo. Don't ever do that. Not even once. Yeah, you're probably not going to do that, right? But unless it's std swap in generics, but sure. Using foo subteam widget, the odds just go up. The odds just went up. Foo subteam project widget, odds definitely just went up. Subproject widget. I have actually encountered teams that had nested namespaces 6 levels deep. Like, this is not hypothetical, right? And if you're trying to use code out of a thing like that, like, does anyone want to fight against me that it is more likely that you are going to using declare that than this? Right? Clearly, this is human nature. I don't want to type all of that ridiculousness. You're going to fight? What about
subproject equals la, just up.
So the question is, what about namespace aliases? Namespace aliases also factor into this logic just fine. I just didn't cover it in the slides, but yes, namespace aliases are a thing that counts, and you'll see what the punchline looks like. So the question really is, how much does an API make sense in context when you're reading that code? Right. So I see a call that looks exactly like this. Set contents foo.proto, some string cast of a git config. I don't know what's going on. Right. Oh, this was a using absol file set contents at the top of the file and then a few hundred lines of code. And okay, so with that in mind, foo.proto is a file name, and I'm dumping the contents of git config into that file name. Right? And maybe you could have figured that out without that context, but the fact that I hid file by using declaring it is not helping anybody. Set contents by itself doesn't say as much as file set contents would have. Maybe we should have just named it that way. As nested namespace length increases, it becomes increasingly important for names to be clear without the namespace names. Right? Is that, anyone not buy that? Seems pretty straightforward once it's said out loud. Kind of sad, but true. Similarly, this is part of why our namespace is actually only 4 characters, not 6. We really would prefer you not to have to alias things or declare them. The worst part of this is from a maintainability perspective, the associated namespaces for a name include all of the parent namespaces. Right? This is not Java. In Java, you add a new package in a new directory, and when you import things, it's limited to that package. It's limited to that directory. In C++, your namespace, your associated namespace search path is the namespace that you're in plus everything between you and the global namespace. Right? So the side effect of that is while it feels so good to have these deep, detailed, nested namespaces that so perfectly put everything in their place, everything has a place and everything is in its place, in practice, you're not helping anything because name lookup in C++ is very permissive, right? You are not going to search just from project, some project, foo, widget, whatever, right? You're going to search in all of those. And that can become a problem, right? The rules for namespace naming at Google historically, like before I was on the styles committee, was very much in line with Java. Like, we kind of wanted the two languages to be very similar, and we were sort of glossing over the intrinsic technical differences between them. And one of the rules there was namespace choice. Your namespace should be an analog for the directory structure, right? So if you were in directory net DNS foo, you should wind up with namespace net DNS foo. And the side effect of this is it's not Java. You're not only exposed to the things in net DNS foo, you're exposed to the things in net DNS foo, net DNS, net, and the global namespace. And worse, every time that you refer to something, the worst thing we ever did was follow that pattern and then have a util top level. And everyone has their own util local project, right? And so we have a util top level, and we have a bunch of important utility code in the top level. So we have a util status in the top level. And you can't ever refer to util status because your project has a nested util, and they just become ambiguous, and your build breaks. And your build tends to break because someone added an include randomly to add other namespaces that you hadn't seen before. And so Abseil doesn't do all of that. Abseil very specifically is a single flat namespace because nested namespaces in C++ are worse for readers. You lose context the deeper you go because people tend to using declare them away, or they add aliases so that you have a non-standard lookup. And they're worse for writers because you're actually exposed to more namespaces than you would be otherwise. This is a terrible deal. We should renegotiate this deal. So, it's namespaces. Exceptions. This is basically duplicating what I said earlier today. Yes, we will try to support exceptions. No, we won't design APIs that require them. And no, you can't throw exceptions from every interface. Herb, in talking about synthesizing operator spaceship, made offhand comment to, yeah, and all of your spaceship operator comparisons should be no except, because it's going to be expensive and weird if it's not. Increasingly, one of the side effects of the compatibility guidelines that I'm talking about for the standard is going to be, yeah, there's stuff that we haven't bothered to say you shouldn't throw an exception from that you just probably shouldn't throw an exception from. Absale will also do the same. This is a great time to talk about exceptions if anyone has more exception questions. Really? None? None? Okay. Talk about it.
Oh. Apparently they have sell code.
Why don't you say it at the microphone? Yeah. Talk in the mic so that it's on video. This is John. He works for me.
Help us, we're all enslaved. Sorry, wait a minute. So to clarify Titus's answer from earlier in the keynote, Absale currently does not have exception safety tests, but it will soon. So we are going to be testing and making sure that our things, as much as we can, that our types do work with at least basic exception guarantees in most cases. So it's not we're actually taking them seriously.
Anything else?
Cool.
Talked about all of this. Don't actually want to do that yet. So, compatibility guidelines. I am almost positive that one of the more unusual and maybe hard to swallow pieces is that we're telling you all the things that you can't do with this code. And keep in mind, these are all of the things that you can't do with this code if you want to be able to upgrade smoothly. Obviously, if you just want one version of it, you can do whatever you want. Doesn't matter, right? It's the difference between programming and engineering. I think we've talked about those sufficiently. The list on the website is slightly larger, and this question came up. Dynamic libraries. You have...
I actually have a question about this. What is your policy for realizing you forgot to forbid things?
I'm gonna email the public list and be like, hey. Which, actually, so until very recently, like, I've been trying to use the term compatibility guidelines consistently today. It was, like, last week that I sent a message to the team saying, hey, are we using the right term? Because for the previous, like, year, it had been the project contract. But contract has kind of legal overtones and meaning, and the lawyers were like, no. Which they're right. Like, we can't promise that at a legal sort of level. But we really don't want to break you. We really want to treat you well. We really just very, very specifically need, like, yes, this code is what it is. This code, like, we need the ability to add new functions. We know how it's been written. So, like, one of the side effects here is don't rely on dynamic unloading. Google is insanely worried about, let's just do this here. By the way, Absale is in Godbolt now. It's awesome. Google worries a lot about destruction. So this actually ain't any good. Because, also, auto. Anyway, I would complain about this in code review because you have a string at global scope. Destruction for a C++ program, like when you start terminating your program, is a exotic and dangerous time. Because one thread is going through and running all of the destructors for everything in your program, and the other threads are just chugging merrily along, which is terrifying, right? Because if your assumption is, I just need to make sure that all of this data exists before I have started things up, that's fine, except the end of your program introduces a whole different complicated set of dangers, right? And there is nothing as terrifying as having a thread that is still serving code and, or still serving requests and still writing data to permanent storage that is referencing the contents of a string that has already been destructed. Right? The Google style guide goes to great lengths to talk about safe initialization and destruction, and that you cannot have complicated things at global scope. The side effect of you can't have complicated things like that at global scope is that they tend, and there will be a tip on this, tip 110. I can do most of those by reference or by number. My const, whatever it is. We tend to wind up with functions that rely on so-called magic statics. Because the thread safe static initialization rules for C++ 11 say that, oh, did that wrong. Missed a thing. Static, there we go. The thread safe static initialization rules for C++ 11 say that no matter how many threads are executing that initialization, only one will actually happen. And then all of the rest of them will see that result. And because we have heap allocated this, it's never going to get destructed when that one thread starts doing global destructions. Right? So it lives from the first reference through the end of the program. This is lovely, right? We have completely solved our initialization destruction problems, right? So, questions, because there's obviously two questions here. Just say it.
It's an extra bool check.
It's an extra atomic bool check that's branch predicted. Yes, it's true, I don't care. But it's true, that is true. The other one is, isn't this a memory leak? Was that?
Valgrind
says it might be. No. There is still a pointer to that. You haven't leaked it. You haven't leaked it. It's still reachable. So there's a question of how do you find a leak? It is unquestionably a leak if you have allocated a thing and there are no pointers in your memory space that point to that allocation. Right? At that point, yeah, you leaked it. If you have allocated a thing, not deallocated it, but you still have a pointer to it, that's iffy, but debatable. If you have allocated, if this wasn't static and I was allocating it on every call, that would be stupid. I'm not advocating that. But what we do adhere to is we don't go for what we call draconian leak checking, that absolutely every allocation has to be freed, because the operating system is going to free it. We're specifically talking about as your program is melting in its death. Like, as soon as it's done with that, the operating system is going to be like, well, all that memory's done. Who cares if you call delete on it? There is literally no difference, right? The point where leaks matter is if you have consistent leaks, right? You leak it once every time you call it, that's a problem. If you have a leak where you allocated it and there's no way, there's no pointer anymore to it, like, there's definitely a problem there. This, debatable, and we've decided this is okay, especially because this turns out to be such a handy way to avoid races at construction or destruction.
Needs to be const.
Whatever. the snark from my friend in the audience, don't go to his talk tomorrow, was that it needs to be const. Anyway, this obviously has ties to the, where'd it go? Oh, it's the other thread, there we go. Do not rely on dynamic unloading. If we are doing this consistently for bookkeeping and globals and whatever, like in our synchronization primitives and things like that, if you load and unload and load and unload and load and unload and load and unload, yep, that's not gonna work. Those are gonna be messy leaks. Can't help you. Right? And on net, I care more about not corrupting storage during process shutdown than I care about supporting dynamic loading and unloading. You may have different priorities. We can talk, but you're not super likely to convince me to change mine. But we can talk. I'd love to talk. Similarly, not all abseil libraries are suitable for dynamic loading. I believe that there are some that very specifically have program global initialization startup stuff that has been rigged, like this really, really, really has to happen before main. If you're only triggering that during, hey, I DL opened this and you're gonna run some constructors, I can't guarantee that that's gonna work correctly. Maybe it can. And if you can make it work correctly and send me a patch that doesn't look terrible to maintain, I'm happy to try. I'm just not gonna promise it. Right? I hope that's fair. The ADL thing. Yeah, that's most of what's in there right now. Any compatibility questions before we move on? Cool. I would love, just as a taking the temperature, show of hands, am I asking totally crazy things, or do you think this is workable? Workable? God, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Totally crazy? Nice. One guy. Cool. Next up, a little tour. So I mentioned there's some string stuff. There's actually quite a fair amount of string stuff. If nothing else, I really super want you to all play with StirCat. Jorg up here in the front was nice enough to send me benchmarks. Maybe I should just spin that up. I'll grab your benchmarks. Boy, I hope there's no...
Ballsy.
I know, right? I'm mirroring the whole... It's no good. We'll just see. Jorg. Jorg. Benchmarks. So, according to Jorg, this current benchmarks, and I'll do this in a new doc so that it's nice and visible and not showing my inbox. Tip of the week 3 doesn't come up much anymore. Might be 6. I've trained people out of it. Pretty sure it's tip of the week 3 is use StirCat. And part of that is this first benchmark. So, no, part of this is the worst benchmark of both concatenating multiple times and streaming. These are terrible. Don't ever use these. All right? Concatenating multiple times is messy, specifically because the language has no way to recognize a string of concatenations as one logical operation. We can sort of optimize things away by moving the temporaries, but it is entirely possible that you're calling multiple allocations the longer this gets, and it is very likely that you are doing an n squared copy in the number of concatenation operations. Right? Having something like strcat that is one function call, it is very easy for it to say, oh, let me evaluate all of these parameters, figure out how long this needs to be, do one allocation, and then blast individual arguments into that output as necessary. The end result is almost an order of magnitude. I do not claim that your string formatting is in your critical loops or the most important hot paths of your programs. But if you can save an order of magnitude in nuts and bolts sort of things, you should get in the habit of doing that. Right? Yes, profile before you optimize, but also just don't be stupid. Right? So thank you so much, Jorg. Like I said earlier, if we shipped nothing but strcat, I would actually be pretty happy. Questions? There'll be a tip of the week on this.
Are we going to keep the numbers?
Yes, we are totally keeping the numbers because I don't want to learn another set of numbers. Strcat, great. Split. Split is magic. Split. Is Greg here? Greg.
Font size it up.
Greg has proposed split early on for standardization. It's kind of stalled. We'll try to restart that, because fundamentally, this is the type of thing that the standard really needs, right? It's just usable. And this is going to be one of the places where my read is there's a little bit of a fight between the pragmatists and the theorists, right? It was a little bit contentious to get starts with and ends with into the API for StringView, because you can build those out of find. It's true, you can build those out of find, but it's a pain, right? The thing that you want is starts with and ends with. You can build split out of all sorts of primitives. It is not the fundamental operation, but this is used a lot. And just having access to it, this is a very nice quality of life improvement for your day-to-day programming. One of the magics about split is it will give you back whatever you ask for. This is not in the order I left. Should we just do it in Godbolt? We could just do it in Godbolt. It's not bold at all. Those aren't sorted right. Let me fix it. Stir split, you're right. Thank you, John. You're the worst. All right. So, I need all sorts of things, don't I? So, the trick, the nice trick. Also, why doesn't this, that's fine. So, stir split That is a very small window. Just does what you expect. Yeah, I suppose I do. It's been a really long day. It just does the thing that you want. One of the things that is actually interesting and esoteric, it's not entirely clear that we made the right choice, but there's an interesting discussion to be had here. When you do the following, so I have a string. Sure. This is very nice for absol string view in absol string split. Now I need another include. Okay, so by default, it'll convert to string view for you. So the side effect of this code, there are no copies in any of this except for copying it to cout. That is actually really deep and important and powerful. The other thing, the thing that's maybe good, so that's the stupidest invocation of strcat. Oh, there we go. So a super stupid invocation of strcat, right? Anyone want to guess what is sort of funny going on here?
That it works.
That it works. It is sort of funny. This, almost off the screen, is the invocation of strcat. It is returning temporary. That temporary is then being rinsed through strsplit, and then looped over by reference to the internals. This obviously should work. This is the way that we want all of this to work. And yet, by normal language rules, the temporary returned by strcat has died long ago. So we fixed it. Strcat has overload, or strsplit rather, has overloads specifically for our value reference for this case, so that we can lifetime extend that object so that you can range-based loop over it. On the upside, this means the code that you want to write just works. On the downside, we are weakening your mental model for how temporaries and range-based loops interact poorly. Sorry? Like, I'm genuinely not sure which of these is the right answer. I know which one causes fewer bugs in the short term. I don't know which of these causes fewer bugs in the long term. But this is what we did. So, there are buckets of little tweaky things like this floating around in AppSo.
Yes. Can for each loops be fixed in the standard?
Can for each loops be fixed in the standard? It is a medium priority of the Google delegation. I think it is possible, but as with so many things, it turns out to be complicated. So, don't know. Anyway, there are like 3 minutes left. Questions? What other things do we have besides strings? What do you want to show, John? Something that's really like string view, but more general. John really wants to show span. John has spent a bunch of work We have a span. It does not quite perfectly match the current span proposal because we have questions as to whether or not the current span proposal will make it through in its current form. So the abseil span models basically what we expect span will look like when it ships. This matches what Marshall wants as far as the signedness of size.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Certainly I have concerns about the current span proposal.
Yes. So yeah, there are things like span. We will try to keep span up to date with the span proposal as the span proposal evolves, and at the point that it actually gets into something like a TS, we'll match it more precisely. Everything about abseil is we really want to be ahead of the game. We're trying to make this work over time. Question?
What does the name abseil mean, and how'd you come up with it?
So the internal code name that started this was a derivative of Google is splitting into Alphabet. And the first name didn't make any sense. And when we started realizing we were about to actually start renaming and moving code around, we needed to pick a name that was going to match something better. And so very briefly, it was a name that the legal and finance departments eventually told us was not okay, because there are trademark things and it's complicated. And it turned out that that name was ABCL. I'm not going to comment on the meaning of that acronym. But if you have a project who is named ABCL for long enough, you start saying Absil. Or my manager likes to troll me and he calls it a buckle. But you start saying abseil. And then we had to change it. And so we're like, okay, we have to change it. Let's change that C to an S and just keep pronouncing it abseil. That is literally what happened. Also, basically everything that's short is already copyrighted and trademarked in technology stuff. And that's kind of annoying, especially when we really want a short namespace. So abseil doesn't really mean anything. I'm personally amused that abseil is the German word for repelling, so it is controlledly going down on a rope. There might be a comparison between that and riding on an explosion into space. I will leave that to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
You mentioned tooling would ship at the 5-year mark to transition.
Say that again?
At your keynote earlier, you said when you hit the 5-year deprecation point, you'll ship tooling to move people over and then remove the feature. Would it be possible to get the tooling like sooner so that people who want to move off can?
Yes. We should. Most of the tooling for the easy things like renaming absol optional to std optional it may already exist. Should not be a big deal. We'll try to ship that soon. The 5-year thing in general is, we'll support 5 years whenever it's possible. There are exceptions to when it turned out to be possible. Like I talked about using magic statics. You can't use magic statics on MSVC before 2015. So we don't have a 5-year compatibility on MSVC. We hope to build up to a 5-year compatibility before we start deprecating support. But the target is 5 years, and it's not a requirement either direction, but it's a general guideline.
Thank you.
Session is over. Any other comments? Wonderful. Thank you all.